support from Orange Taxi, a new taxi company providing services to the U of I campus and the Champaign-Urbana area 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at 367-8888. Programming on WILL is made possible in part by Strawberry Fields on West Springfield Avenue in downtown Urbana. Strawberry Fields has an in-store nutritionist, provides a wide assortment of natural foods, vitamins, and supplements, as well as a full deli, coffee bar, bulk herbs, fresh breads, and produce.
This is the Afternoon Magazine. I'm Celeste Quinn, and in just a moment or two, we are going to talk with registered dietitian Susan Kundrat. She joins us on the first Monday of the month here on the Afternoon Magazine to talk with you about diet, nutrition, and exercise. However, this afternoon, we're going to take a moment or two to talk with Jay Pierce and Maeve Riley because this is our spring fun drive, and at this time every year, we come to you and ask you to join us with your financial support. Jay Pierce, why is it so important that we hear those calls of in Pledge Central, those calls of people joining us with a pledge of financial support?
Well, it's especially important this year because we're into yet another year of erosion of tax-based support. And I know, you know, I talk to people, Celeste, who go, gosh, when are you guys ever going to talk about something else? And then on the other hand, I speak to many people who go, you know, I never really realized the situation that you're in. And it is a serious situation. And I think sometimes we might not communicate that as effectively as perhaps we should. We receive almost half of our funding now from listeners. And that's due in part because of the growth of the Friends of WILL in numbers and in contributions. But it's also due in large part because of the erosion of federal, state, and university funding, $333,000 and counting over the last 3 years. That's a significant part of a budget that, for all things told for the radio stations, both of them, it's about $1.5 million a year. So you can see what effect, you know, you take a fifth of the budget away. It's gone. We're not going to get that back. What we're trying to do right now is to fend off further erosion, and we have been informed by the university that we can expect in the fiscal year that starts July 1st, a 4% cut, not an increase in our appropriation from the current fiscal year, but a 4% cut. That is something we'll have to deal with immediately. They said the fiscal year after this, expect another one, and maybe the year after that. All told, that will be over $100,000. So, you see, when we've been talking over the past few years about the paradigm shift, the shift from tax-based support to listener support, we weren't fooling around. We were telling you the truth. This is what you can expect, and this is what's happening. Now, fortunately, our listener contributions have been increasing over the years. The problem is they haven't been increasing as quickly as the tax-based support has been eroding. So that's why it's especially important for you to come on at 217-244-9455. Come on board as a friend of WILL, even at the $40 basic membership level. But we have a special if you can afford $80 today.
If you can afford $80 or more today, you may request as your thank you gift a copy of Mouth Sounds by Fred Newman. Fred will be our guest later today on the Afternoon Magazine. He's one of the sound effects men on A Prairie Home Companion. Jason Croft, let's hear a sample of Fred's work. That's called the honk rap.
The Spike Jones edition of the Afternoon Magazine.
Yeah. And Maeve Riley is in Pledge Central this afternoon. Maeve, what could we do here if we had a couple of $80 calls here right off the bat this afternoon in the 1 o'clock hour?
Well, we're just $162 away from $35,000 during this fund drive. So if we heard from two folks, maybe three folks, they'd get us right over that goal, get us to $35,000. $80 pledge, you'll get Mouth Sounds by Fred Newman, and you'll be supporting great public broadcasting here on WILL. The number's 217-244-9455.
And Mouth Sounds is a book and a CD with hundreds of sounds and voices, stories, and video clips on it. Mouth Sounds, yours for a pledge of $80 or more. And also you'll get the membership card, member benefit card, and subscription to Patterns. Great deal. 217-244-9455. 844-944-9455.
You call right now, make that contribution, and you'll know that you're helping to support something really valuable in the community. The program that's coming up in this next hour is something unique. The Afternoon Magazine brings in experts in various fields to give you direct access to them that you wouldn't otherwise have. If this is something that's important to you, in light of what I was talking about as far as the budget goes, or if you want to get a book and an enhanced CD with some funny sounds on it, which is cool too, whatever motivates you, get to the phone, 217-244-9455, and this is what allows us to bring you 49 weeks, because I guess 3 weeks out of the year now we're coming to you with these messages, but 49 weeks out of the year of uninterrupted interviews in the 1 o'clock hour of the Afternoon Magazine.
A little more Fred Newman there. Yankee Doodle Dandy. Fred Newman will be our guest later this afternoon here on the Afternoon Magazine. In this portion of the program, listeners, I welcome your questions for registered dietitian Susan Kundrat. She joins us on the first Monday of the month to talk about diet, nutrition, and exercise. So we welcome your questions this afternoon for her. If you'd like to talk with Susan, give us a call. Here are the numbers in the Champaign-Urbana area. 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, call toll-free, 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. Susan Kundrat is a sports and wellness nutritionist and the owner of Nutrition on the Move. She specializes in developing personalized nutrition plans for athletes and the general public. She's also an adjunct lecturer with the Food Science and Human Nutrition Department at the University of Illinois. She's a frequent contributor to magazines on health and fitness, and she's the author of 101 Sports Nutrition Tips. Questions about diet, nutrition, exercise? They're invited this afternoon, 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area, if you'd like to talk to Susan. Or anywhere else, if you're outside the Champaign-Urbana area and it'd be a long-distance call for you, use the toll-free number, 800-222-9455. Susan, welcome back.
Hello, good to be here.
Nice to see you. Well, we have a new food pyramid unveiled since your last visit. What are the critics saying? What do you think?
Well, the new food pyramid is out now. We've all been waiting and waiting and waiting for it. And really, there are a couple of main differences. You know, when you think about the old food guide pyramid and how that was all set up, this one's a little bit different when you look at the view of the pyramid. It actually kind of goes in a more of a vertical level there when you look at the pyramid. And part of the focus really this year has been on activity as well as what you're eating. And I think we've been talking about that when the new national recommendations, dietary guidelines came out recently. There was a lot more focus on activity. And it's also focused on personalizing what you take in. Instead of a real range of intake levels, what people are hoping for is that you'll get online, be able to pull up the pyramid and put in your age. When you do it, you can put in your age and gender, put in your activity level, and then it will kick out more specific recommendations for you. Now, if you're not online, you can still get that information. In fact, today I brought some things that we can photocopy for people if they're interested, and they send a self-addressed stamped envelope. We can send them some things that would give more general serving guidelines based on calories. So the goal really is also taking the old pyramid and saying, well, for instance, we looked at things like grains, 6 to 11 grains a day. This new pyramid says, well, 3 of those grains should be whole grains. They should be things like whole wheat flour or whole grain cereal or things that actually have more fiber and more natural grains. And the other difference really is it does put in servings, again, more into cup formats that we can understand. And so just like the new dietary guidelines, we're really shooting for almost every level you've got, you know, at least a cup and a half or 2 cups of fruits and at least 2 or 2.5 cups of vegetables or more. And so hopefully it's going to be more user-friendly. It's a little confusing. I think the feedback I've gotten from a lot of my clients, a little confusing at the beginning, so it's going to take some getting used to.
Yeah. So you don't have to go online, but if you can go online, you could go to mypyramid.org and you can put in they ask you a couple questions, I think 2 or 3.
Yes.
Your age, your sex, and the amount of activity
right
that you engage in every day. And then they They give you some guidelines. So it's that's pretty helpful. But then you kind of get into the, you know, making it, you know, every day is one thing. But
right.
then they also want you to kind of keep things in mind throughout the week. And I can see how it could be a little confusing, especially if you get a lot of your meals out or on the
right.
run.
Right.
But one of the things I think that is nice about it is it does remind us that exercise is important. Part of the pyramid is a stairway mm-hmm. with a figure going up the stairs. So that's also something that's helpful, I think, in terms of what they recommend for you on the calculator. Also, you figure in the amount of activity you engage in every day. So that's a really strong reminder as well.
Right.
But there are other ways that you can get this if you're not online. There's information out there, and we can send that to folks
sure.
this afternoon who are listening. If they send us, drop us a note to the Afternoon Magazine at WILL Radio, 300 North Goodwin Avenue, Urbana, Illinois, 61801. I understand, though, that the popularity of this website has been pretty amazing.
Right.
In the first 24 hours, they had 48 million hits.
Yeah, I tried for, I guess, the first 2 days a number of times to get on, and I couldn't get anything off of it. And I'd passed it on to several of my colleagues, and they were trying to get on, too, and got feedback. I can't get on yet. I can't get on. So I think everybody was pretty excited to see what this really would come up with.
Yeah.
But I think the interesting thing about the website, too, if you do get online, there is an area there where you can sign in with an ID. And then on a daily basis or weekly basis, you can put in what you've eaten. You can actually put that in, and it'll give you an analysis. You can put in your activity level. So for some people who do like to track things online, it's helpful in that way. And I think the main thing to think about with this is if you're really trying to make major changes, use it as a general guide. You most likely are still going to want to meet with a dietitian and get your personalized plan. What I found with this, too, and I had some of my athletes I work with go on there and try to get set up, and it really doesn't account for exercise the way that I think it should in terms of that. And that's been one of the controversies with it, is that maybe it's not going to work. It'll work more for people in the middle, maybe not for people so mm-hmm. much who are trying to lose a significant amount of weight, or for those who are exercising so much that they're burning a whole lot more calories and may need more protein and other things. It's a general guideline, and it should be used that way. And then, again, if you've got real specific needs, you'd probably need that to be modified with a professional as well.
Okay. We've got a couple of listeners waiting to talk with us. We go first to Ashmore, Illinois, on line one. A listener there on line one. Good afternoon.
Yes, good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call. My call is in relationship to the older of us that have some osteoarthritis. Are there diets specifically that we can think about if we're not too heavy, if we're not and we're active and so forth, that we can use to kind of slow down osteoarthritis?
Yeah, there are a lot of things that have really been coming out lately. I think a lot of the research on osteoarthritis has dealt with what's anti-inflammatory. In other words, what can you eat that might decrease the inflammation that your body's going through, which often causes the pain with the arthritis? And so one thing that has been looked at quite closely that I've actually done a lot of reviews of myself are different fats, and how can you incorporate some of what we call these good fats or anti-inflammation fats. Things we always think of right away are things like omega-3 fatty acids, things like fatty fish, salmon, tuna, those kinds of things. Maybe adding more nuts and seeds that have more monounsaturated fat, and even things like flaxseed and flaxseed oil, and some of these oils that are a good ratio of fats. To add, you know, certainly in a lot of cases with osteoarthritis, sometimes people will supplement, generally under a physician's care, because those supplements can have other side effects too, but sometimes supplementing with omega-3 fatty acids is helpful for some people too. So we look at those things. We also look at trying to get a diet that's pretty high in natural antioxidants that may help repair cells. And in a very simple sense, that's making sure you're getting plenty of fruits and vegetables, lots of different colors of things. You know, not eating the same things all the time in terms of fruits and veggies.
All right, like the food would be like spinach. And,
right, if you'd and, look at colorful things, just like you're saying,
lettuce.
Spinach, kale, dark green lettuce. We hear a lot about blueberries lately because they're a real high antioxidant fruit. So any kind of berries, citrus fruit. Melons, things, you know, if you look at your plate and you say most meals I'm getting two or three different colors, and
yeah.
I'm getting at least one fruit and vegetable and hopefully more at each meal, then that will help build your antioxidants as well. And then, of course, the other thing we look for is maintaining bone strength. And those are things like getting enough calories, getting enough protein, making sure your calcium is high enough. For most of us, that's at least 1,000 milligrams a day of calcium. Vitamin D is really important for bone strength. In fact, recently there have been a few studies where they've looked at people in this area of the country and found that particularly as we age, many, many people have low vitamin D levels in their blood. And so vitamin D helps you maintain strong bone. It helps work with calcium. And so that's something that's kind of becoming more and more a concern, making sure that, again, you're getting at least a multivitamin that's got vitamin D in it. For some people, if they're not getting enough calcium, they might need extra calcium and D in a supplementary form. And I've certainly had clients who've been real concerned about it. I've recommended that they've gone and their physician talked about it, and the physician has sometimes ordered vitamin D level testing and found in some cases to be very low. And so in those cases, they need extra supplementation. So magnesium is important, vitamin K. So there are a lot of nutrients that are important for bone strength as well.
Oh, okay, the question, if you use, let's say you take a capsule fish oil a day and you take a regular vitamin and you take something that has calcium, magnesium, and zinc, and with a little D in it, and you go to your other various colored vegetables and other things, melons. How about the new drugs that are coming out, which work at the cellular level on the COX and the LOX metabolism pathways?
Well,
have you had any experience with those?
I'm not an expert in the medications necessarily, so I think that's something you want to discuss with your doc. But I think what I try to look at as a more of a holistic dietitian is really looking at the full picture. So certainly making sure you're working really closely with your physician on any medical, related things that could be taken care of or helped at least with medicines. And then we certainly look, I think sometimes people stop at that level. And I'm a real big believer that what you can do with a diet can really enhance that too. Sometimes a medication is really helpful. Sometimes maybe you don't need that, but you can do things with food, and sometimes it's a combination.
Yeah.
It's kind of like with cholesterol lowering. I see no reason why someone would go on a statin and not want to try to enhance the statin with what you're doing with your diet as well. So,
right. That's why I'm thinking. Diet-wise, we're kind of, and vitamin-wise, so forth, and exercise and so forth, we're doing these things. And it has been brought to my, I've done a little research on the Internet, and it looks like that you could add these with what you're doing. And this is what my physician also thought, and I just wondered if you had any experience with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think it's looking at the whole picture and sometimes coordinating what you're doing eating-wise with the medication as well. And just like you mentioned, so much of it is staying active, keeping your body active, moving, getting your exercise, doing what you can do within your realm of movement, and that's so crucial as well.
How about, is there any call for any extra vitamin A in any of this? Or do we? I've always thought we've got enough vitamin A from a well-balanced meal.
Well, vitamin A is something that if you have it in a multivitamin, generally you just want to get 100%. And there are so many things now that we see, well, could there be more problems if you take in too much vitamin A?
Yeah, I noticed that.
So generally I go with the recommendation that's generally thought of now is get it in a multi. You're getting it in other foods,
right?
Especially if you're getting things like spinach and other greens. You're getting good beta carotene there if you're eating carrots and other things too. So it wouldn't be something necessarily that I would, as a, across the board, say supplement extra with.
Well, you've been very helpful. I thank you very much.
Thanks for the call. Let's talk with another listener. Caller on the toll-free line, line 4 in Cutler, Indiana. Hi.
Hi, good afternoon. My question kind of fits with your first caller. I'm one of those people who had vitamin D levels tested because of a severe osteoporosis problem, and I was found to have very low vitamin D3 levels. So I've been placed on pretty high calcium daily intake, a recommendation of between 4,000 and 5,000. And I'm real confused about absorption rates of calcium carbonate versus calcium citrate. I wondered if you had any thoughts on that.
Well, I think there are two things happening. I mean, as a general sense with calcium, what we usually recommend is that people get a lot of different sources. And that way, if you're taking in supplemental form with carbonate versus citrate, it's not that big of an issue, whichever one you take, whichever one you can handle better. One thing we look for with calcium is that you don't take 1,000 milligrams at a time. Generally, you're just taking 500 at a time, which will enhance the absorption. Now, in your case where you're taking these large amounts more therapeutically, it's kind of a whole different situation. You know, we, again, as a general sense, we recommend you try to break that down as much as you can during the day. Hopefully your body will absorb it better along those lines as well. But, you know, you read all kinds of things about calcium and the type of calcium, and most of the reviews that I've seen where we've looked at researchers in the area giving their recommendations, you'll see some recommend citrate more and some carbonate more. And I think the most important thing on a practical sense is just getting it in consistently. And so when you take it, you don't take more than 500 at a time generally, so you can absorb it better. And you're taking it every day so that you're not losing out on that. And I think the other thing is you just want to look at, are there other ways you can get calcium throughout the day? Because the one thing we really know about it is if you do get it with D, if you do get it several times a day versus just once or twice, you tend to absorb more of it, no matter what form it's in.
Okay. Have you read any research about difficulties with such high calcium intake in renal problems or kidney stones, that type of problem?
Well, I have. I think initially we had more concern about that, and it seems like lately there have been some reviews that have maybe not linked it as much. And I think the main thing, again, if anybody takes calcium real therapeutically like you're doing at these high levels, then that's something obviously that your physician probably is monitoring and keeping an eye on, and making sure that it's an okay level for you where your other blood levels are and things like that. You know, some people certainly feel that high calcium intake or extra supplementation has promoted what they've had in terms of calcium, you know, calcification in the kidneys and things. But I don't know that we know for sure. And I think it's an individual matter. So I always tell people, if you're taking large amounts, just make sure that's being, you know, you're working closely with your physician. So that's all kind of part of your plan of what's being monitored.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
You're very welcome. Let's talk with another listener, a caller in Champaign on line two. Hi.
Hi. I just wanted to get your opinion when you were talking about the different colors of vegetables and the antioxidants and everything. Whenever there's something like that that's touted as much as it is, which that seems to be lately, it reminds me of all the brouhaha about fiber preventing colon cancer, and all of a sudden they found out that, you know, from the very large study that wasn't true at all, but for years it had been touted. Do we really know that much about the antioxidants, and do they really work that much? It seems like people are looking for a silver bullet. And I've always read that in any vegetable, anything you eat, there are numerous, you know, hundreds of different chemicals that you don't know how they react because they're only looking at, like, the antioxidant. And I'll hang up and listen. Thanks for your help.
Good question.
Right. That brings up a really important point. And here's an example. I've been working on this research project here at Illinois where we're looking at educating health professionals on particular foods and their benefit for cancer prevention, which is really tricky because with the studies we have, most of them have been these large epidemiological studies where people, we can track what they eat and then track their risk of disease, but it doesn't necessarily mean this particular antioxidant is what is preventing cancer by any means. And even in one of the slides we have from Marianne Lila, who's one of our researchers here at the U of I, there's a whole listing of all the antioxidants and other you know, nutrients and phytochemicals that are found in berries. And it's a list of about 30 different ones. And so I think that just brings the point, like this caller says, that there's no silver, you know, there's no magic bullet to this. It's more an idea of, we know that if you have a higher intake of fruits and vegetables, that decreases your risk of many diseases. And so there's definitely a shift. As you go from 5 to 6 to 7 servings of fruits and vegetables a day, as you go up, generally your risk of certain diseases will go down. Several types of cancers, heart disease, blood pressure, problems with blood pressure, all these things. And so I think if we look at it more as a food, as just an overall lifestyle, and eating plenty of fruits and vegetables, that's what we're shooting for. Whether a particular antioxidant or particular phytonutrient is really the key, we still don't know that much about it. We do know that these foods tend to be real high in those, and a variety of antioxidants. And so I think the most important thing is more fruits and vegetables, making sure you're getting a variety, you're not eating the same things all the time, and that exposes your body to a lot of different nutrients and antioxidants that certainly we know have roles in high nutrient diets and in trying to prevent disease. But there's so much we still don't know.
Mm. Let's take another call. A listener in Flora on line one. Hi.
Hi, Susan. It's great to talk to you again. I wanted to kind of cover the same area to some degree that the last caller brought up, and that is, I was curious about what foods you feel are most important in including in a diet and excluding in a diet for those of us who are looking to prevent cancer? And also, do you feel that there is any, I guess this is the second part of my question, do you think that if a person is unfortunate enough to be fighting cancer and getting treatment, that how you think that maybe a diet might go ahead and be important in that area also?
Okay.
Well, those are some good questions. I think, you know, if you look at particular foods, again, I would have to say that, you know, from the studies we have, and this is one of the tricky areas, in that some foods we have more studies on than others. You know, for instance, let's take tomatoes, for instance, where there have been several studies on intake of tomato, and when you get your blood levels higher in lycopene, which is a particular antioxidant found in other things, but also high amounts in tomatoes and processed tomato products like tomato paste and whatnot, that appears that if your lycopene levels in the blood are higher, then that may be give you a decreased, you know, chance of getting prostate cancer. So something like tomatoes and particularly processed tomato foods have been studied. They've been studied a lot here at the U of I, which is why I'm more familiar with it. Same thing with things like blueberries that maybe have been studied for their benefits in cognitive function and in different areas as well. Soy, which we have a lot of research on, that again in typical forms and one or two servings a day of natural soy food seems to have some good benefit, particularly if you have it early on in life. So I think if I looked at, you know, what I try to do with clients is look at what are several foods that you'd want to try to get in most days. Something like greens, dark greens, spinach, kale, things like that, loaded in tons of nutrients. So I'd say that'd be one I'd try to get in consistently. I'd try to get in some kind of berries consistently. I'd certainly try to get in, again, more dark orange or dark green type vegetables. And that might be something like broccoli, which we know is helpful in a lot of things if you like it. And certainly looking at, again, just a wider variety of fruits, citrus. A lot of benefit from citrus in general, whether that's grapefruit or orange or things like that. So, you know, those might be some key ones, but certainly there are tons of, you know, variety of foods that I think are helpful. I also think I'm a big believer in beans and, you know, the benefit of beans. One of the callers talked about fiber, and it's true that there have been some studies of late saying, well, it may not be the high fiber diet that prevents colon cancer, but we know that fiber does a lot of wonderful things in the body, helps with blood sugar regulation, helps with decreased cardiovascular risk and so on. And for some people, it does really help with regulation in terms of, you know, being regular when you're going to the bathroom. So there are certainly benefits, and I think beans are one of the least expensive, high-protein, high-fiber foods that you can get with a lot of other nutrients. And so, you know, that might be a staple that I try to say, well, that's a staple, what I try to do in my diet. And I think the other thing with foods and nutrition is you really should enjoy what you're eating. So you don't want to be eating things consistently that you absolutely don't like to eat. So finding things within this realm that you like and consistently fitting them into what is a balanced diet, I think, is really the key. Go ahead.
No, I'm sorry. I was just going to say, do you think there are foods that at least should be limited or avoided for those that want to go ahead and again do the best job possible in preventing cancer?
Well, I think some of that has to do with processing. And again, this doesn't relate to every food, but I think in general, trying to have more fresh foods, I'm all in favor of that, trying to buy more local food, because I think, again, you don't have the problems with maybe decreased nutrients from transport and the length of time from when a food, particularly a fruit and vegetable, was harvested versus the time you eat it. And so, and trying to buy more, if you can buy food without additional chemicals and things, if that's something that's important to you, that could be a benefit. You know, and those are things I'd look at. And then, of course, a simple thing is to try to avoid a lot of things that are fried and real greasy and the trans fats, which we found have had more problems. And so looking at those things as a whole, I think, help you, you know, even if you cut down on fried food and you increase fruits and vegetables, I would say that's a great start, because those are two concrete things that we know we have good studies on that try to keep us healthy. And, of course, there's so many other things involved in disease states and cancer and things that I've had so many clients who do everything right and they still get cancer. So there's no guarantees, but hopefully we can stay healthy. And then if someone does get sick, they have a better chance of recovering or fighting off the disease because they're healthy to begin with.
Well, it's always a matter of odds, isn't it? I mean, you're always increasing your odds of avoiding a problem if you eat right, and decreasing your odds if you don't eat healthy, correct?
Right, yeah. Exactly. And I think to answer your other question quickly, you know, with cancer treatment, it's very individualized. What I find, my experience working with people going through treatment for cancer is So much of it is maintaining strength and maintaining health, eating enough, getting in enough calories, getting in enough protein to stay strong, and certainly trying to get in plenty of fruits and vegetables and things like that too. But part of it is just staying strong throughout the treatment so that you maintain as much as you can of your lean body mass and you're able to have the energy. And that's really the focus of what we look at through treatment. And then after treatment, we can look more at some of these preventative things again and really maximizing the diet.
Well, that sounds great. And, you know, you mentioned a lot of foods, and I like every one of them, so you did a good job there.
You're in good shape then.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for the call. Next we go to a listener in Urbana, line two. Hi.
Hi. I have a daughter who just seems to be sick all the time, sinus infections, lung infection, and I'm just wondering what she should be doing to boost her immune system.
Well, I think from a nutrition end, again, you really want to look at, is she eating enough? Is she getting enough total energy? And certainly some of these foods, if we look at immunity, again, a lot of this relates back to fruits and vegetables and particular things that have been studied for immune-enhancing ability, like garlic and onions and things like that. I also am a big believer in trying to maintain a healthy gut if you get sick a lot, because certainly we know that some people don't absorb nutrients as well. We don't absorb them as well as we age. And so even something simple as adding yogurt every day or adding kefir, or adding something that gives that good bacteria to your intestinal system, those are easy things to do on a daily basis, and that helps our body digest better and absorb nutrients better. And so if I'm working with a client and one of our goals is to enhance immunity, we certainly look at a whole battery of things like that to try to incorporate daily and again, adding some of these good fats that we find may enhance immunity as well. You know, on the other side, there are all kinds of herbs that have been studied for immune status, and there are other things that sometimes people can do consistently that help with that. Getting enough sleep really helps, making sure you're active if you can be, and those kinds of things too. So sometimes people eat really well, but they don't get enough rest, and then they just never seem to recover very well. So there are a lot of things that add into it as well.
Okay. I missed one thing. You said eat yogurt every day. And then you said something that sounded kefir. And
yeah.
I don't know what that is.
Kefir is a fermented drink that's basically a fermented milk drink, or can be made from soy as well. And it basically tastes like drinkable yogurt. It's kind of tart, and you can buy it plain or in different flavors and just in drinkable form. And so it works really well in smoothies and things like that too. And so it's not that popular here. It's just K-E-F-I-R. But I find it very helpful. I had, you know, this is kind of anecdotal, but I had a client the other day I was working with, and that was one thing we started right away. She had some GI concerns, and she emailed me after about 3 days and said, my stomach has not felt this good in ages. And of course, it's not magical, but maybe in her case, she didn't have enough good bacteria in her system. And so perhaps this was one thing that, among other things we could do, that might help her intestinal tract and help her digest food better so she doesn't have as much indigestion and stomach upset.
Okay, thanks so much.
Okay, thanks for the call. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. If you'd like to talk with registered dietitian Susan Kundrat. This is the Afternoon Magazine, and Susan joins us on the first Monday of the month to talk about diet, nutrition, and exercise. She's a sports and wellness nutritionist and owner of Nutrition on the Move. You can find her on the web at www.eatandmove.com. That's EATNMOVE. We have a call coming in, but in the meantime, I want to ask you about servings. You talked with one caller about beans, and you are a big fan of beans, but what does an ounce serving of beans look like?
Well, it probably depends on the bean, but you'd probably want a half cup as a serving.
Okay.
A half cup of cooked. And so that might be more like a quarter cup of dry beans or so. But a half cup of cooked is a good amount to be, you know, you can think of that as a protein serving. It might be an ounce, might be up to an ounce and a half, depending upon the kind you have. But, and maybe even 2 ounces if it's real concentrated. But that would be a good serving, which usually that's about enough for us to eat at one time, you know, about a half a cup, because that's going to give you, depending upon the bean, it might be 6 to 10 grams of fiber. So that's great. You know, one thing we continually are low in this country is fiber. And so we're shooting for probably at least 25 to 30 grams. So you can see where beans can do a lot of things with fiber as well as protein, as well as giving you kind of a starchy serving too. So,
okay. And grains, we want half of our grains to be whole grains.
Mm-hmm.
And grains are measured in ounce equivalents, like meats, beans, fish, and nuts.
Right.
So you want to give us an example or two of 1 ounce, of a 1 ounce serving mm-hmm. of grains.
An ounce would be about a slice of bread or a tortilla or a half cup of cooked rice, preferably brown rice, or a half cup of cooked pasta, something like that. So I think about it as a serving is about a tennis ball size. I mean, that's a good size of a serving. Or it'd be what looks to be a regular slice of bread, that kind of serving. So.
Okay. Let's talk with another listener. Caller in Champaign, line one. Go ahead.
Hi. My mother doesn't, I don't think, eat very well, and she's overweight, and when I have her over for dinner sometimes, I try to serve very healthy food, lots of fruits and vegetables, and she's told me that her doctor has said that she's not supposed to eat much fruit and vegetables, and I'm wondering if that's possible. Is there anyone that's not healthy for?
Well, it's hard to say specifically, not knowing her specific concerns, but you know, there are people who have trouble digesting fruits and vegetables if they've got some gastrointestinal concerns and things like that. Sometimes there's some acidity issues with particular fruits, especially, that they can't handle very well. So there might be some things like that going on, but usually those types of things can be remedied by how a food is prepared. For instance,
Okay. You
know, if fresh broccoli, let's say, really is troublesome in terms of being too gassy, then sometimes cooking it can really help, because once you cook it, you release some of those gases and then it doesn't bother you as much. So that might be a good question for her, is do you handle them better if they're prepared a certain way, or is there something specific that, you know, specific reason why you're not able to handle them? And it might just be a particular type of fruits and vegetables that bother her, you know, depending upon what the concern is, really.
And would something like kefir that you were talking about before, would that assist with those kind of things?
Well, it certainly might if it's a digestive issue. Really what yogurt and kefir and these things do, or there are supplemental forms of what we call lactobacillus, or these good bacteria. And what they do in the gut is they actually bring in some of this basically good bacteria in your system, and then that bacteria is needed for digestion. And so for some people, it's really helpful in a way that can, when you do eat food, you've got more of this good bacteria that helps digest the nutrients, basically, and helps you absorb them. And so it keeps your gut working a little bit more healthy in some cases. So that could be a possible factor, you know, that might be helpful for her as well. But
Okay. It
would probably depend on her certain concerns and everything. But I don't see most people can digest things like yogurt and kefir well, because they don't have a lot of lactose in them generally. And if lactose is a problem with milk sugar, sometimes the soy varieties can work well too. And so that's something that I just think we're learning more about how the whole intestinal system works with digestion and absorption. And sometimes we eat foods and we think we get all the nutrients from them. We maybe don't. And it's particularly as we get older, because like a lot of our systems, our digestive system doesn't generally work as well. And so that's where we have to pay special attention to how we're using nutrients.
Well, great. Thanks a lot.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks for the call. Hope that helps. That call and talking with that listener about milk and yogurt and lactose, the new pyramid, the new guidelines are emphasizing that group, milk mm-hmm. and calcium-rich foods. If you are lactose intolerant, if you can't tolerate that, what can people do to build into the diet so that you know, you're getting an adequate amount of calcium and vitamin D?
Mm-hmm. Well, if you can't handle anything with even a little bit of lactose, and there's certainly a lot of people who even a teeny bit of milk causes problems, then you probably do want to look at some varieties like soy milk or other things that's fortified with calcium and vitamin D, but do not have the milk product in it itself, do not have the milk sugar. And then, of course, there's other things like the calcium-fortified orange juice that might be an option, where you're getting a fruit plus you're getting the calcium. Sometimes if you go more for those things, you have to make sure you're getting the protein that you'd miss out on the milk, too, and that might be eating extra protein somewhere else. And, of course, calcium-fortified grains and breads and all these things now that are out there. Some of them, I'll caution, are calcium fortified, but they still have lactose in them too. So you have to really read the label and make sure they don't use milk in some other part of the processing of the food. But Those can be some additional ways to get that in. And I find for people who are lactose intolerant, it's pretty difficult for most of them to get in enough calcium in food. And those might be people we really target to make sure they don't need supplementation, because sometimes 3 or 4 servings of something besides a milk product is really hard to come by daily to make sure you're getting enough calcium.
Okay, let's talk with another listener. Caller on line one in Champaign. Hi.
Hi. This may be not a question for a dietitian, but I'll ask it and you can tell me. Are there any special foods to eat or avoid if one has just one good kidney?
Well, generally, if someone's healthy, I mean, this is a general sense. Generally, if someone's healthy and they have one kidney, generally, if they don't have any other medical problems going on, let's say your blood levels are fine of things and you haven't had problems with any renal-based, you know, kidney problems or anything like that, most of the time people can function normally. If their kidney is healthy, then usually they can eat a pretty normal diet. Now, on an individual basis, of course, that's something that you'd want to have checked out and make sure that there's nothing that looks like it's problematic for you. If you don't need to be watching sodium or watching potassium or looking at anything else. Sometimes with one kidney, you know, there's concern if you're on a really, really high protein diet, you may be at higher risk for problems because your kidneys have to flush that through or break down the protein and get it. So, you know, as a general sense, we say don't go on a real high protein diet if you have any, you know, risk of kidney problems. I once had an athlete who went on a real high protein diet. He ended up having problems and it was determined that he had one kidney. Well, no one knew he had one kidney anyway, but he had a little harder time processing all this protein. So, you know, there are certain things you might be more aware of. But what I would do on an individual basis is just make sure that you're really getting checked out thoroughly with your physician periodically so you know that there's nothing specific that you might have to pay extra attention to.
Oh, thank you very much.
Well, thank you for the call this afternoon. And thanks to everyone who called in this afternoon. And a reminder that Susan joins us on the first Monday of the month to talk about diet, nutrition, and exercise here on the Afternoon Magazine. So she'll be back, believe it or not, in June.
Yeah, it's hard to believe.
Okay. Well, thanks for coming in and talking with the audience and sharing your expertise.
Yeah.
And we'll look forward to seeing you in June.
Thank you. Can I say one little thing?
Yes.
And that is just that, just let me say one thing, that when I moved here in 93, there must have been 4 or 5 people who told me that you're going to love Champaign-Urbana because we have the best public radio and the best public TV. And I have to say the first time in my life that, I mean, I always had enjoyed public radio and TV, but the first time I, on a daily basis, began being such a consumer of public radio and TV. And many friends of mine who've moved from this community have said the same thing, oh, we sure miss WILL, even if they've moved to a really great community, you know. And so I would just really encourage people. I hear so many people come in and talk to me and say how much they love the show and how much they really appreciate community, what we have going on in this community. And it really, I think for a lot of people who come here, this is a real bonus of living in this area. And so I'd really encourage people to support it because I know so many people who love what we have going on here but maybe don't support it consistently. So, you know, I'd really encourage people to step forward and do that because for me, this is a big part of why I love living here is I feel like WILL is an important part of what we have here, and it's a special part. So, and I think if you do move or you have people who move away, they might tell you the same, that, boy, it's not the same somewhere else. And so I think we're fortunate to have WILL.
Nice. Thanks, Susan. That's terrific. Thank you very much. It is, you know, it's a community effort. Susan comes in and volunteers her time, you know, once a month. So many other people do the same thing. Jay Pierce, our station manager, is here with us in the studio.
Yeah, thanks. Thank you, Susan, very much. Appreciate those thoughts. And you know, we do hear that from people. It is pretty unique. I found that when I moved here, as a matter of fact. I was working at another radio station in town, and one of the people who worked there listened to WILL all the time. At the other radio station, sit back in his office and listen to WILL. And it's like, what are you doing? He was like, oh, you got to hear the station. It's great. So, it's cool. I was very fortunate to end up working here. So,
well,
that's very good.
Susan has made a great case for us here this afternoon, a great testimonial. And so now, if you'd like to follow through, get to a telephone, give us a call at 217-244-9455. That's 244-WILL, or you can join us online.
WILL.UIUC.edu. You can pledge online. You can hear the show again online. You can set up to have this show podcasted to you, as a matter of fact. that's the technology that that we're getting into these days. And Susan, thank you for all the time you donate and volunteer to come over here to the radio station and be available free of charge to our listeners.
You're welcome. I really enjoy it.
That's great. And that's what we try to do with the radio station. We try to have a dialogue. We try to reflect the community. I think Maeve Riley's out in Pledge Central right now. 217-244-9455 makes the phone ring out there. Maeve, we're getting dangerously close, I think, to like $36,000 or something.
I think we're $107 away from $36,000. So we need to hear from you right now, 217-244-9455. We have volunteers standing by. It'll just take a minute of your time. Let me suggest a level that you can make a pledge at. The $40 level is our basic membership level that entitles you to Patterns, which is our monthly programming guide, and also makes you feel good about supporting public radio, contributing money to the Afternoon Magazine and our other fine programs here on WILL. And Celeste, I think we have this special gift that we're going to be talking about pretty soon. So
we do.
Yeah.
Fred Newman, who was one of the folks on A Prairie Home Companion that provide us with all those wonderful sound effects, he will be our guest later this afternoon here on the Afternoon Magazine. And if you call in a pledge of financial support at the $80 level or above, you may request, as your thank you gift, a copy of his book, Mouth Sounds. This is a guide to help you sound like Fred Newman. You can put a whole lot of zip in your lip and a whole lot of zip in your life. His book is called Mouth Sounds, How to Whistle, Pop, Boing, and Honk for All Occasions and Then Some. Over 200 special effects you can make with your mouth. Plus, voices and sound stories, because there's a Super Surround Sound CD that comes with the book, Mouth Sounds. So a pledge at the $80 level or above, you may request this as your thank you gift. And to all of those who have joined us so far in this spring pledge drive, thank you so much. That number to call, 217-244-9455. Make that pledge of support today. It is 7 minutes before 2 o'clock. Settlement prices should be in from the Chicago Board of Trade. Here's Todd Gleason.
Thanks much, Celeste. Settlement prices are indeed in from the Chicago Board of Trade. They're in for the Mercantile Exchange. We'll get a complete look at those numbers momentarily, but would like to add my voice to the idea that the financial support coming from our partnership in the community, those are the people that listen to us, is an opportunity for you, the agribusiness folks and the farmers in the area that listen to the ag programming, to help out as well today. The number to call, 217-244-9455. Here's what I'd really like. I think they said we were looking for what, $107. So I'd like just one pledge from the ag community. If that's you, call up, $120 pledge right now and help us get over that $36,000 mark right now before we get to the top of the hour here at 2 o'clock Central Time. It's kind of one of those mileposts that helps us along during the day as we're asking for your financial support. If we can make it through $36,000, $37,000, $40,000, that's certainly helpful to us and keeps us upbeat along the way. So if you're a farmer and you're listening, for the settlement prices, they're up right now. And if you'd like to help us out, give us a call, 217-244-9455. One pledge of $120 will do the trick. Get us over that $36,000 mark. Of course, I'll be back during the closing market report, give you some good reasons why you should pledge your financial support to this station from the Chicago Board of Trade this afternoon. Futures in the wheat pit finished like this, down 3.5 cents at 315 high, low at 310.5 for the May, and the May settling at 314.5. They were down 3.5. July futures, a 324.5 high, low at $3.20. Settlement price at 323.25, down 2.75. In September's, 332.5 the high, the low at 328.5, settled at 331.75. They were down 2.75. In December futures, 342.5 high, low at 338, settled 340.5, down 3.25. March contract down 350.5, the high, the low at 347.5, a settlement price at 349, and they were down 4. By the way, if you're dialing in support of ag, make sure you tell that to the phone volunteer, because we need to keep track of all those ag pledges. AgriGold is helping us out with a challenge this week, and your pledge will count towards that challenge. May corn, 202 the high, the low at $2.25, settlement price at $2.50, down 4.25. July, 210.5 high, low at 208.5, and settlement price at 209, down 4.5 for the day. September futures, 218.25, the high, the low at 216.75. Settlement price at $2.17. They were down 4.5 cents. And the December contract at 227.75, high, low at 226.25. Settlement price there at 226.5, down 4.25. March futures, 235.25, high, low at 234. The settlement price at 234.25, down 4.25. And May corn for next year. That's the 2006 contract, 240.25, the high, the low at 239. Settlement price at 239.25, down 4.25 for the afternoon. From the oat pit, the nearby May contract, 134. The settlement price down 4.5 cents today. Had that high at 35.5 and a low at 34. July oats, 140, the high, the low at $1.37. And the settlement price there at $1.38.25, and they were down 4.5 for the day. From the soy complex, unchanged at the end of this Monday afternoon, 620 the high, low at 608.5. Their settlement, 619.25. Once again, that May contract unchanged. July futures now up a penny for the day. 628 the high, the low at 616. Settled near the high at 627.25. August futures, 626.5 high, low at $6.15.5, settled 625.75, down a quarter. And the Septembers were off 3/4 today, 622.5, the settlement price, the high at 23, the low at 15 for the Septembers. New crop November soybeans, the harvest month, $6.23, the high, the low at 612, settled 622. They were up 1 cent, and the Januaries were down 0.75 cents today, 623.5 the high, the low at 614, and that January contract settling at 622.75 in the bean pit, down 0.75. Bean meal at 195, even on the settlement, up 50 with a high of 195.20 and a low at 190.90. That's 190.90. Soybean meal now, July futures, 194.20, the high, the low at 189.80, settled 194 even. They were up 50 as well. May bean oil down 14 cents, 22.45 the settlement. That was also the high price, and their low price at 22.28 today for the May contract in the bean oil. And the July futures, 22.55 the high, the low at 22.38, settled a penny off the high at 22.54, and they were down 12 for the day. Now here's Celeste with the numbers from the Mercantile Exchange.
Okay, Todd, mostly a lower day today for livestock prices. May feeder cattle, the high 108.87.5, the low 108.27.5, the settlement 108.52.5, that down 15. August 108.50, the high 107.75, the low, the settlement 107.95, that off 15. September 107.30, the high 106.90, the low 107.15, the settlement, that down 25. June live cattle, 86.05, the high 84.90, the low 84.95, the settlement, that down 67.5. August live cattle, 86.17.5, the high 85.40, the low 85.65, the settlement, that down 35. May lean hogs, 79.25, the high, the low 78.45, the settlement 79.07.5, that up 92.5. June lean hogs, 77.92.5, the high 77.27.5, the low, the settlement 77.42.5, that off 2.5. July 79.20, the high 78.50, the low 78.90, the settlement, that up 15. August lean hogs, 76.20.